The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, July 2018, Volume 20, Number 7. And this is the second of four installments of the July issue. On the cover, Oprah sits in her garden in Hawaii, and she has a backdrop of hydrangeas that range from pale blue to a little bit deeper blue and lavender. And she's sitting in a white shirt, sleeves rolled up, and this massive pleated skirt, full-length skirt, and it's in this pinstripe. And this month's headline is, "What would make you happy? If you can define it, you're one step closer." And let's start out this second installment with, from the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, The World According to Gail. And right up front, we have what looks like lemonade with in a clear glass with slices of lemon around it and a mint sprig in it. And the heading is Sip. Gail says, "I wouldn't normally recommend a restaurant solely for the beverages, but Home Sweet Harlem, an American bistro in New York City, is a delicious exception. Owner Donna Lewis has perfected a fresh concoction made from pineapple, mint, lemon juice, and fresh ginger. When you visit, just pair a tall glass with some fried chicken and waffles, and tell Donna I sent you." Below that, under the heading Watch, Gail says, "I've seen Mamma Mia on stage and at the movies, so there's no way I'm missing the film's sequel, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Your favorite cast members, including Colin Firth and Pierce Brosnan, are back, along with a new face or two. Hi, Cher. This time, Sophie, played by Amanda Seyfried, is the one expecting and discovering she has more in common with her mom, the matchless Meryl Streep, than she thought. Throw in spectacular Greek vistas and ABBA songs that didn't make it into the original, and you've got yourself a little vacation." And there's a picture here of Meryl Streep in a blue sequined jumpsuit and a furry jacket. And she's holding a microphone, and I think there's sort of a mist and like bubbles. It's a disco look behind her. And then in the upper right-hand corner, Gail is on Broadway. She's holding her hand up at the marquee for the musical Summer, the Donna Summer musical. Gail says, "Any Broadway musical that encourages you to sing and dance is my kind of show. That's exactly what I did during Summer, the Donna Summer musical. The Disco Queen story is brought to life with three different actresses embodying her at three different life stages. You'll, of course, hear Donna's hits, but you'll also learn about the physical and emotional abuse she suffered while building her career. If there's one thing this icon taught us, it's that you need to work hard for the money." And she definitely did. Under that, tune in. "I really try not to add more dramas to my long list of must-see television, but every year HBO gets me to break my rule. Succession is about a media company owned by the dysfunctional Roy family. The past is prime. Logan doesn't want to give up the throne, but his four children, and that's his oldest Kendall, shown at right here, are more than ready to take over. I'll be tuning in Sunday nights to watch the fireworks, but HBO, please let me finish the first season before releasing another hit." And the son shown here from the TV show is sitting against an executive desk with the New York skyline in the window behind him, and he's in a suit and tie. And finally, under the big heading, Listen. "I've always told Drake he's not like the other kids in the class. His new album, Scorpion, proves I'm right. The first single, God's Plan, went number one when it dropped and was only knocked out by, wait for it, his second single, Nice for What. In other words, Drake's the rare artist who outperforms even himself. Given the rapper crooner's track record, I bet he'll have more chart toppers this year." Now let's look at the very first page of Live Your Best Life. And they always give us a great big photograph. And this one is a cityscape. And we have possibly 3 or 4 dozen pigeons flying around and pecking around on the plaza. There's a classical building in the background with steps, and dancing amidst the pigeons, some flying, some pecking around, as I said, on the plaza, is a ballerina. She is leaping through the air in her red feathered tutu with its black top, arms up, legs split. And the quote below it is from Tove Jansson from Moomin Summer Madness. And here's what she has to say. I have to calm down a bit, or else I'll burst with happiness. And now let's look at this month's gratitude meter. 5 things we're smiling about this month, and they go from awe to awesome. And at number 1, full circle. Hit your target of a perfect beach day with this pom-pommed towel, aka summer in terry cloth form. Its shape means you can rotate your body instead of your towel as the sun does its thing. It's from bando.com, and it's shown here in concentric circles like a bullseye, orange, yellow, pale blue, black, kind of a sherbety orange, regular orange, yellow, and then a pink center. And it's got yellow pom-poms all around the edge. And they have a little snapshot of someone holding it on the beach. And it looks like it might be about 5 or 6 feet in diameter. She's trying to wrap it around her shoulders. Here's the sun setting in the background. And the next item is Ready, Set, Glue. On Making It, NBC's new competition series, which starts July 31st, contestants crochet and paper mache their way through weekly DIY challenges with the hope of being crowned Master Maker. Your hosts, craft-loving Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. Who knew? And they show Amy here in some dark red overalls. And Nick is in a denim shirt. Okay, now our right sort of halfway through from awe to awesome, small prints. That's P-R-I-N-T-S. Once upon a time, a kiosk dreamed of delivering something more exciting than tickets. Then one day, her wish came true. She became a short edition dispenser, printing free stories and poems on receipt-like strips. Today, 30-plus machines are living happily ever after all across the land. Go to short-edition.com for locations. And they show this black kiosk with an orange top and a little orange outline around where the paper's coming out. And it looks like, you know, a credit card receipt, and a hand is holding it, only it's been filled with print. Now we're getting closer to awesome, and we are at Scents of Adventure. Embrace the outdoors indoors with candles inspired by 13 national parks. A blend including vetiver and pine for Yellowstone, sea salt and wood for Acadia. Next best thing to a campfire. Go to goodandwellsupplycompany.com. And they look like little paint, like quartzized paint cans, but instead they are full of wax and a wick. And there's even one for the Great Smokies here. It has a blue label with red. And finally, we are at awesome. Natural resource. If you can't tell a Japanese cherry tree from a dogwood, it may be time to find Seek. The free app uses image recognition technology to identify more than 20,000 wild species of plants, animals, and insects when you photograph them. We give it 2 green thumbs up. So what we have is a picture of a phone, and it has an image of some orange flowers. And the heading, it's a match with a description and name underneath, and the person is holding this phone, looking out towards a field of orange flowers with mountains in the background. And now, across the bottom of the page, we have this little subheading that says, Creature Comforts, Raising the Rough. Modern design has gone to the dogs with canine casas that protect your pet from the elements without sacrificing the element of style. Here, three houses fit for a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And so let's start out with the first one. Designer dog houses has four spiffy styles, including the Hillside Contemporary with cedar siding and the Coastal Cottage, shown above, with rubber roofing. And the Coastal Cottage is a board and batten painted in an off-white with an opening and a little pad for the front porch. And we've got a cute little bulldog in this one. And it has a brown roof and it has a little window above the door where the dog's sitting. And it's painted in brown. And next, easy to clean tile floors, check. Wireless speakers, yep. A personalized license plate that reads bad to the bone, you bet. The miniature customizable campers from Straight Line Designs are souped up non-road warriors. And this is the classic little very old-fashioned tiny camper, the one that looks almost like a circle from the side, and it just has the wheels right under the middle. And we've got a cute little furry dog looking out from this one, which is in kind of a yellow and blue. This is from StraightLineDesigns.com. And finally, we have a very contemporary looking doghouse. If you're sans backyard, check out Modular Dog. Its specialty, wooden towers meant for indoor use, with a compact vertical design and adjustable legs in case your floor is slightly warped. ModularDog.com. And this one is a square that's tall, and it has a slant roof. It is painted white, and the door is cut out of a corner, and it has the black slanted roof. Still in Live Your Best Life, we are now going to look at the celebrity edition, which is called My Best Life. And this month's celebrity is Patricia Clarkson. And she's looking at the camera from the left, her head's tilted up, and her blonde hair, which is very wavy, is kind of flowing behind her and across her shoulders, and she's wearing a black leather jacket. She has on some snazzy red lipstick. The boldly versatile actress who co-stars in HBO's moody thriller Sharp Objects on Southern Charm and her go-to candy. Best conversation starter. She says, I turn to the fact that I was born and raised in New Orleans. People have usually been to the city or want to visit, and sometimes they pick up on my slight southern accent, and then I can tell them I'm from there. Either way, it gives me a chance to tout my beautiful hometown. Best summertime passer. She says, sitting in New York City's Washington Square Park with my rescue dog, Isadora Duncan, we people watch together. Best little-known fact, I'm a really good archer. Growing up, I went to summer camp for 10 years. I was never good at volleyball or tennis, but it turns out I could use a bow and arrow. Isn't that crazy? Best advice, my mom always said, Patty, rise above. It's about having great confidence. If someone is treating you badly, think of yourself as better than that bad situation. Best curse word? I like them all. And then she says several of them. And then she follows up with, can I even say that in O Magazine? And finally, best guilty pleasure. I love every flavor of licorice, but I don't keep any in my house because I want to look good on red carpets. We'll move now to the Let's Eat section, and this month's singular sensation, a delicious celebration of one standout ingredient. This month, the comeback kids of the foodie scene, ancient grains. And the picture that they have done, they have just piled up several piles of grains, and they're in different shades, basically of brown and tan, with lots of different textures, with a black background. Why we love them. These days, every old grain is new again, and for the best reasons. Compared with modern grains like wheat and corn, ancient varieties like quinoa and amaranth tend to be less processed and contain more filling protein and fiber. Plus, they bring new textures and flavors to the table. Whether you use them to lend complexity to your morning cereal, add to healthy twist to homemade treats, or bulk up summer salads, as we did here, we think you'll agree that these oldies are goodies indeed. For moister, heartier banana bread or muffins, substitute half the recipe's all-purpose flour with spelt. It's a mild, nutty grain that keeps baked goods light. Swap your same old oatmeal for chewy, high-fiber bulgur, a parboiled whole wheat, and top with fruit and chopped nuts. The earthy flavor and al dente texture of farro make for a more substantial, extra special risotto. And unless your quinoa comes pre-rinsed, run cold water over it for about a minute to help prevent a bitter or soapy taste. And now let's hear our first recipe, sausage, corn, and basil millet salad. This makes 4 servings with a total time of 35 minutes. Here are the ingredients: 6 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil, 1 cup of millet, 2 1/4 cups low sodium chicken broth divided, 2 teaspoons of kosher salt divided, 1 small red onion thinly sliced, 1/4 cup seasoned rice vinegar, 1 pound sweet Italian sausage, casing removed, cut into half-inch pieces, 2 cups of corn kernels, 2 garlic cloves, finely minced, 1 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, 1/2 teaspoon ground black pepper, 1/2 cup chopped parsley, 5 ounces of baby spinach, 1/2 cup of chopped basil, flaky sea salt for finishing. And now here are the instructions. In a large pot over medium-high heat, warm 1 teaspoon of oil. Add millet and toast until golden, about 5 minutes. Transfer to a medium bowl and set aside. Add 2 cups chicken broth to pot and bring to a boil. Mix in toasted millet and 1 teaspoon of salt and cook according to package directions. In a small bowl, combine red onion slices and vinegar. Set aside for at least 15 minutes. In a large skillet over medium heat, cook sausage until cooked through and edges are golden, about 8 minutes, then transfer to a bowl. Deglaze the skillet with the remaining 1/4 cup of chicken broth. Scrape with a wooden spatula. Stir in corn, garlic, red pepper flakes, 1 teaspoon of salt, black pepper, and 2 tablespoons of oil, and saute for 4 to 5 minutes. Fold in sausage, millet, and parsley until warmed through. In a large bowl, toss spinach, basil, and warm millet mixture. Top with pickled onions and flaky sea salt. Mix reserved pickling liquid with 1/4 cup of oil. Serve on the side as a dressing. And our second recipe is garlic ginger quinoa salad. This makes 4 servings for a total time of 35 minutes, and here are the ingredients. 1 cup of quinoa, 1 1/4 teaspoons of kosher salt divided, 2 garlic cloves grated, 1 1/2 inch piece of ginger peeled and grated, 4 teaspoons of sugar, 1 tablespoon of toasted sesame seeds, 3 tablespoons of soy sauce, 2 limes zested and juiced, 1/2 cup plus 1 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil divided, 1/2 cup chopped cilantro, plus more for garnish. 1/4 cup chopped mint leaves, plus more for garnish. 1 bunch of asparagus, cut into 1-inch pieces. 1 carrot peeled and julienned, or cut into matchsticks. 1 red pepper, cored and julienned. 1 cup of shredded red cabbage. Now, here are the instructions. In a large pot, bring water and quinoa to a boil. Add 1 teaspoon of salt and cook according to package directions. Set aside to cool. In a small mixing bowl, combine garlic, ginger, sugar, sesame seeds, soy sauce, lime zest, and juice, 1/2 cup of oil, cilantro, and mint, and set aside. In a medium skillet over medium-high heat, add 1 teaspoon of oil and asparagus. Cook until lightly charred, about 5 minutes. Season with the remaining 1/4 teaspoon of salt. In a large mixing bowl, toss together asparagus, carrot, red pepper, cabbage, and quinoa. Fold in half the dressing. And finally, serve on a platter and garnish with additional cilantro and mint with remaining dressing on the table. And here's a footnote. Did you know? You can get an extra flavor boost by grating rinsed and dried ginger with its skin on. Organic is best to avoid potentially harmful chemicals. Let's move now to the Love That section of the magazine. And we're going to start off with me describing some glasses styles to you first. I'm always on the lookout of how to describe shoes and glasses and use the right terminology. And I ran across a vocabulary of eyewear about a month ago. And so we have two styles here. The article is about reading glasses and some really interesting features that this company has come up with. But I'm going to describe the two styles of glasses that we have here. And the first one is called Pantos. These are almost completely round glasses, but the temples, those are the arms that go from the glasses over to the over your ears. The temples and the nose bridge are set a little bit high, about 3/4 of the way up on the circle, as opposed to the types of glasses you might think associate with hippies and John Lennon, where they were round, but they sat kind of high, and the nose bridge and the temples were almost at the halfway point of the circle. So the Pantos, P-A-N-T-O-S, glasses have the temples kind of high and the nose piece high. And then the other style of glasses that we're going to talk about today are wayfarers. And wayfarers are almost straight across the top. The temples are very high, and the bridge across the nose is very high. And then the rest of the glasses are not square, but they're close to it. They're just slightly rounded. It is described as a medium squared shade with thick plastic frame. These were made famous by Andy Warhol and Bob Dylan. So now let's look at this model who's holding a pair of Wayfarers, and she's got two different pairs of glasses on her face, one up on her forehead and one on her nose. The article is called Sea Change, and that's S-E-E, change. These revolutionary readers let you work every angle. Bunny Eyes, E-Y-E-Z, named for creators Stacy Fritz and Jenny Hutt for their late mother Bunny. They have temples that bend down like opera glasses, ideal when you're coloring your roots, doing a face mask, or baking no more cookie dough in your hair. And the frames, available in 5 designs and 20 colors, tilt forward at 45 and 90 degrees, so you can check your notes and see the audience during your next presentation out of sight. So let me describe the way they hinge. Just a little bit back on the temple, maybe 3/8 of an inch, maybe 1/2 inch, there's a hinge. The temples don't just fold in when the glasses aren't in use. They've got these hinges that allow the entire front of the glasses to either bend down 45 degrees or 90 degrees, so you can look over the top. So we have this blonde model with her hair pulled up, her blonde hair pulled up in a knot. She has a pair of black Wayfarers on her face. She's looking up over the top of them. And they have been bent, so they're angled. The front is angled at 45 degrees. And then she's got a pair of clear green Pantos glasses. Those are the ones that are round with the temples high up on the circle. And then she's holding in her hand a pair of Wayfarers that have a tortoise shell frame on the front, and the temples are red clear acrylic. Readers from Bunny Eyes are $27 each. Go to bunnyeyes.com. Now we'll head over to the Oh Beautiful section of the magazine and read an article entitled Through Thick and Thin, Our Decade-by-Decade Guide to Hair Loss and Solutions to Help Stop the Shedding. The idea of thinning hair may conjure images of balding men with awkward comb-overs, but approximately 40% of sufferers are female. Losing around 100 strands daily is normal. If your hair is coming out by the handful or your scalp is showing through, it's time to get help. And there is help. Female pattern hair loss, FPHL, called androgenetic alopecia, is the most likely cause. Your derm will probably recommend a topical product with minoxidil, typically the first line of defense. Other treatments include spironolactone, finasteride, platelet-rich plasma injections, and hair transplantation when your doctor moves hair-producing follicles from the back of your head to sparse areas. If female pattern hair loss has been ruled out, however, your age can help pinpoint the culprit. If you're in your 30s, possible causes, pregnancy. As many as half of postpartum women notice, quote, a massive loss of hair around 2 or 3 months after giving birth, end of quote, says Lisa Ishii, MD, a hair restoration expert at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore. During pregnancy, an increased number of hair follicles shift to a resting cycle and stop shedding, quote, so for 9 months, you're holding on to hair you otherwise would have lost, end of quote, Ishii explains. After you have the baby and your hormone levels return to normal, that extra hair can drop all at once. Another cause could be an underactive thyroid, though additional symptoms like constipation and weight gain are also usually present. Treatment? Postpartum? You just have to ride it out, but your hair should grow back to its normal fullness. If you suspect you have a thyroid problem, see an endocrinologist to address the underlying condition. If you're in your 40s, possible cause, major psychological stress, the death of a loved one, divorce, job change, or physical stress, such as a major surgery, may be at the root. Ishii says, quote, your body is redirecting energy to give extra support to overworked vital organs rather than to growing your hair, end of quote. Stopping birth control can also cause temporary hair loss in some women. Treatment? If the loss stems from stress, you'll have to wait for hair to begin to fill out again. Don't worry, it will. In the meantime, it may be helpful to discuss the cause of your anxiety with a therapist and consider practicing known distressors like yoga and meditation. In your 50s and 60s, possible cause, frontal fibrosing alopecia, FFA, a disease associated with inflammation of hair follicles, is rare but on the rise, says Lynn Goldberg, MD, director of the hair clinic at Boston Medical Center. It commonly takes out your frontal hairline and eyebrows. Treatment. If you suspect frontal fibrosing alopecia, see a doctor as soon as possible. Goldberg says, quote, the earlier you address the condition with topical and systemic anti-inflammatory medications, the more hair you can save, end of quote. Now, get growing. Still in Oh Beautiful, we have Beauty Talk with Mara Brock-Akil, the 48-year-old creator of TV hits Girlfriends and Being Mary Jane, whose show Love Is underscore, as in fill in the blank, debuts on the Oprah Winfrey Network in June, and she discusses gray power, her morning ritual, and where she gets her glow. Question. You've posted a lot on social media about embracing your naturally gray hair. Why is it important for you to make that statement? Mara says, when I started letting the grays come in, I was just trying to save time. There were things I'd rather do than run back and forth to the salon every few weeks, but I noticed I was avoiding posting pictures of myself on social media. Initially, posting was about allowing me to get over myself and get on with it. Question. Because there's still a stigma about gray hair and making you look older? Answer, right. For me, it felt brave to walk out of the house with gray hair. It feels even braver to take a picture and claim it. I like that power. Question. The response has been very positive, Mara says. I've received nearly 9,000 likes on one photo and so much love. I think people could see that I was accepting who I was in that moment. But I also realize I can change my mind if I want to. We women don't often give ourselves permission to do that. If I color my hair again, so be it. Question. Your hair is gorgeous. How do you take care of it? Mara says, I found someone who understands my hair, Shai Emil, the curl doctor. He cuts my curls individually. It takes forever, but it's worth it. And he introduced me to DevaCurl products, and that's DevaCurl. And there's a picture here. This is a good time to stop and look at the picture. Mara Brock Akil is a very slender, youthful-looking woman with kind of a café au lait complexion, and she wears her natural curly hair so that it just touches her shoulders, and it's pulled away from her face. And the gray really kind of frames her forehead, if you will. And in this picture, she's wearing a silk ivory camisole and a little gold chain and some large tan glasses. So the next, we have a few more questions and answers here. Questions, what makes you feel beautiful? Mara says, I feel beautiful when I'm chasing and fulfilling my dreams. Lately, people have been saying things like, Mara, you're glowing, even though I'm usually looking like a hot mess, no makeup, hair everywhere. I think they see the happiness I feel from being who I'm supposed to be. Next question, any at-home beauty rituals? Mara says, my husband teases me that I spend an hour every morning rubbing in moisturizer. Kiehl's Cream de Coeur is my go-to body lotion, and I love Santa Maria Novella's jojoba oil. Next question, do you wear makeup? Mara says, I don't know a lot about it, and I'm not the woman who's going to go to the department store counter and figure it out. I am, however, a pro with the eyelash curler. At my age, my eyes need a little lift. And next question, what keeps you sane? Her reply, traveling alone. My last solo trip was to the Amangiri Resort, not too far from the Grand Canyon. I stayed for 5 days. It's where I wrote the pilot for my new show. And the final question, yes, the show. Please tell us about Love Is. Mara says, it's a TV memoir inspired by my relationship with my husband, writer, director, and producer Salim Akil. Most people can't believe that we're married and have also worked side by side consistently for 20 years. They are constantly saying that I should write a book about this. My thoughts were always, ain't nobody got time to write a book. But then I realized I could create a TV show. And we have several products that are scattered across the page. The first one is a blue tube, and it says Phoenix Daily Rehydrating Sunscreen SPF 30+. And that's Phoenix, F-E-N-I-X. It's $30. And go to drskinspa.com to find out more. Below that, we have a pump bottle. Olga Lorenzen Skincare Weightless Moisturizer, $75. Go to OlgaLorensonSkincare.com. Akil credits her radiant skin to regular facials from Olga Lorenson at the Canara Skincare Clinic in Los Angeles. And now we have another pump bottle, Diva Curl No Poo Original Zero Lather Conditioning Cleanser, $22 at divacurl.com. And then we have the Kiehl's Cream Decor Body Moisturizer, $30. Go to Kiehl's.com to find out more, and that's K-I-E-H-L-S. And we've got some of those lash curlers, Surratt Beauty Relevé Lash Curler, $30 at Sephora. And Santa Maria Novella Oleo de Jojoba Body Oil, $78 at smnovella.com. It's a white plastic bottle with a round sort of mushroom-looking white lid and some nice kind of old-fashioned-looking black graphics on the front. And finally, the Brow Gal Skinny Eyebrow Pencil in black, $23 at thebrowgal.com. So it's a brown pencil, and it has, obviously, one end is brown and has been sharpened. And at the other end, it has like a little pipe cleaner that you can use to brush your eyebrows. We'll move now to the special feature section of the magazine. And I get delighted every month with the creative way that the creative folks at O Magazine give us the Oprah O, which is almost round on the outside and oval on the inside. So the sides get really fat. And this month we're looking down at a swimming pool. So we've got that blue painted bottom and we see water shimmering. And we've got a bright pink float in the shape of the Oprah O. July 2018. Want to learn how to bask in life's greatness, achieve lasting contentment, and wake up each day full of gratitude and joy? Hey, us too. Let's dive in together. And when we turn the page, we have someone stretched out. This is a created graphic. A beautiful picture of flowers, mostly roses. And we have a woman stretched out across this bed of roses, laughing and smiling. What would make you happy? Seriously now, what would it take? $4 million? A committed relationship with Chris Pine? A job title that includes the word chief? What if you could start being more joyful right here, right now, for the low, low price of free? That's the goal 30 O staffers set for themselves this spring. How'd they do? Read on. This is by Molly Sims. It wasn't rocket science. My coworkers and I had signed up for a month-long course that would allegedly turn us into happier people, and I was crushing it. The assignments were, to put it kindly, basic. Things a needlepoint pillow or a kindergarten teacher could recommend. Be kind. Look on the bright side. Say thank you. But it was science. A Yale psychology professor, Laurie Santos, had created the course, grounding it in measurable research. She adapted it from Psychology and the Good Life, her spring 2018 class that nearly 25% of Yale undergrads signed up for, making it the most popular in the school's history. According to decades worth of studies, if we could spend a month living in accordance with the platitudes on pillows, we could expect to be more joyful. Was I buying it? Not especially. In a world as rotten and rank as ours can be, where school kids are gunned down weekly, elephants are slaughtered for their tusks, women are trafficked like cocaine, and oceans are rapidly filling with flushable toilet wipes, is happiness even something reasonable to strive for? Aren't humans just bags of blood randomly pinging around the planet until we become compost? Santos doesn't think so. She believes we're entitled to and capable of much more joy than we've settled for. She says, quote, "The data suggest that becoming happier is a lot like learning to play the violin or row crew. They're not impossible to do. You just have to commit to practicing," end of quote. Santos, whose laid-back effect, wild curtain of curly hair, and liberal referencing of Beyoncé make her seem more like an undergrad herself than the head of one of Yale's 14 residential colleges. And she calls her assignments rewirements, a play on college requirements, since they have been proved to retrain our thinking. She says, quote, "I also tell my class they can get a happiness boost from deleting their social media accounts, but not a lot of them take me up on that," end of quote. Weeks 1 through 3 had been a breeze. We started with a few self-assessment tests. The multiple choice options ranged from "I feel like a failure" to "As I look back on my life, all I see are victories." Then spent the first week making lists of things we were grateful for, as well as savoring special moments. The next, we focused on social connections and acts of kindness, then devoted the third to getting more sleep and exercise. Reading over the assignments, I had suppressed the world's loudest "duh." But knowing we'd be accountable at the end of the experiment, I diligently filled my notebook with moments of mindfulness, truly appreciating my Thai food and wisecracking with my boyfriend. "I am savoring you," I yelled to a friend over the racket at a party as we sipped old fashioned. And I had to admit how stirring it was to be fully present. It felt almost like double enjoyment, since I got the immediate pleasure, then the pleasure of reflecting on the pleasure. Santos says, quote, "Sadly, it's hard to savor things in our culture. You buy this fancy pastry because you want to enjoy it, but then you wolf it down while checking your email, and you don't even notice it," end of quote. Keeping a gratitude journal, that feel-good chestnut, is similarly based on mindfulness and was solidly been there, done that to much of Team O. "I've gratitude journaled before," more than one staffer said smugly, already familiar enough with the concept to turn it into a verb. I hid my phone from view as I typed out my list on the subway, worried other passengers would sneer at my earnest peons to my cats and the morning sunshine in my kitchen. Santos says, quote, "This exercise really resonates with some people, and others find it a little cheesy, which is fine. But done even 5 or 10 minutes a day, it can have a big effect. It's less about writing things down and more about having time to sit and re-experience what you're grateful for," end of quote. We also kept careful tallies of the daily random acts of kindness we had to complete. In an attempt to clear this section from my docket, I went online and made a bunch of donations to animal charities. Maybe a little lame, especially compared with one kinetically nice O staffer who chastised herself for not being even nicer. She said, quote, "When I looked at my notes, I realized I was way behind. It was like, girl, you did 2 kind things, and you were awake for how many hours?" End of quote. But I still felt like I'd earned a gold star. Research shows this habit offers a veritable combo platter of emotional benefits, since it often involves social connection and reinforces our image of ourselves as do-gooders. I breezed through the assignment requiring us to engage with strangers and faraway relatives in order to enhance our social network. Meanwhile, the shy folk among us looked stricken by the idea of chatting up fellow shoppers in line at Whole Foods. Santos says, quote, "That's because the mind lies to us. The data suggests that social connections extend our lifespan, help us fight off disease, even make us enjoy what we eat more. Yet when you tell people to talk to strangers, they think, this is going to be horrible. But people are excited that you want to relate to them. By and large, the practice makes us feel better," end of quote. And we're going to stop and read a few of the sidebars. Here's a quote from David Stendhal Rast, author, scholar, and Benedictine monk. It is not happiness that makes us grateful. It is gratefulness that makes us happy. And here's another one. In a 2012 New Zealand study, researchers found that the following behaviors enhanced enjoyment of an event. Talking to another person about how good you feel, thinking about how lucky you are, thinking about recapping the experience for others, laughing, telling yourself how proud you are, and focusing on the present. What destroyed the moment? Thinking about when the experience would be over, pondering how nothing lasts forever, and telling yourself you don't deserve it. Subjects in a 2006 Japanese study boosted their attitude by merely thinking about kind acts they'd done that week. A Duke professor and her colleagues discovered in 2001 that among adults with coronary artery disease, the risk of cardiac death was 2.4 times higher for those who were socially isolated than for their socially connected peers. In a 2003 study from the University of California, Davis, participants who were asked to keep regular gratitude lists, in contrast to those who were asked to write down their hassles, were not only happier overall, but they experienced fewer symptoms of physical illness and exercised nearly 1.5 hours more per week. According to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, 40 million adults in the U.S., about 18.1% of the population, suffer from anxiety disorders. Now back to our article. Week 3. The exercise and sleep week was right up my alley. The older I got, the more both seemed like non-negotiables. Without regular exercise, I'm cranky and sluggish, and while Gail King famously thrives on only 4 hours of shut-eye per night, those catnaps would turn me into a serial killer within weeks. Our wellness-obsessed staff wasn't especially shocked to learn that being good to your body would have an impact on your outlook. Still, they had a litany of excuses for skipping the sleep and exercise homework. Toddlers, the draw of an iPhone screen, visiting family, wine, which was name-checked more times than God at a country music awards show. I felt so bad for them as I lay down for a snooze. Then came week 4, but before I got into that, I have to ask, who would pass up a chance to be infused with more mind-expanding, heart-opening grace? Plenty of us. Humans seem to love griping about being miserable and stressed, but apparently relatively few of us want to put in the work to escape those states. To wit, if any group should have been perfectly suited for this happiness project, it was the O staff. Promoting joy through gratitude, exercise, connection, meditation, and self-awareness is kind of our thing. But of the 86 people on staff at O, only 32 signed up for the experiment. And while the assignments were cost-free and brief, many of the 32 trudged along sullenly like teens on a family vacation. In the end, half actually gave up. Only 15 would make it through the final week. Quote, "I was very into it when I started," end of quote, said one editor, going on to say, quote, "but I quit almost immediately. When I got burned out, it was the first thing to go, almost like I'm too unhappy to try to be happy," end of quote. When I asked Santos to explain our lackluster participation, she was sympathetic. She told me, quote, "About 50% of our happiness is genetic, so yes, some people are predisposed to being unhappy, and they might not think it's worth it to seek out those resources or even realize they could feel better. People also assume that our mood is dictated mostly by what happens to us, but that's only 10% of it. The good news is that 40% of our happiness is under our conscious control, and 40% is a lot. It's just a matter of doing the work. Any change is difficult, even small ones you know you need to make. That's why everybody's New Year's resolutions fall by the wayside. How many of these habits do I regularly do? Far less than I'd like to admit. And I teach the class." End of quote. There seems to be a Grand Canyon-sized gulf between knowing what will make us happy and following through. On top of this, we're also susceptible to distracting cultural dictates about where happiness lies. So much of what we think we need to be truly ecstatic, a vacation home, a new romance, a Beamer, a butt that looks like two grapefruit halves, things O staffers sheepishly admitted craving, makes little to no lasting impact on our overall life satisfaction, says Santos. She calls our habit of fixating on these false idols miswanting, and in her course regularly lays out the annoying features of the mind that tempt us toward temporary, often materialistic goals. She says, quote, "We're working toward the wrong things," end quote. Eyeing a $30 kimono online toward the end of our experiment, I thought, this won't make me happier, so what's the point? It was at once defeating and liberating. Santos says, quote, "Our minds are terrible at accurately predicting what will make us happy. I think that's why humans have historically needed religion and faith. Those traditions push us in the direction of doing acts of charity, having gratitude, being in communities where we connect with people, all things that give us a boost. Luckily, non-believers can get a boost from these habits, too," end of quote. Being one of those godless heathens, I was happy to hear that even I could benefit. As the 32 and eventually 15 of us made our way through our month of happiness tasks, evidence piled up that they were, in fact, providing solid little bursts of joy. One editor said with a look approaching awe, quote, "I was lonely over the weekend, but instead of holing up in my apartment and giving myself a facial, I invited a newish friend out to dinner, and after hanging out with her, I felt better," end of quote. That general sentiment, a bewildered, "I feel better," was echoing across the office. We all know that being nice makes you happier, and being happier makes you nice, and water is wet, and French fries are delicious. But as we tackled each assignment, staffers were consistently surprised by how well the rewirements worked their magic. At the close of the project, the last 15 standing took our self-assessments and found that our mean scores had gone up in every category. The experiment shined a beam of light on how lucky most of us already are and shifted our focus onto what matters, said one staffer, quote, "The gratitude-themed stuff made me realize how secure I am after years of feeling shaky and worried all the time. I used to be so terrified about something coming for me, like a huge bill in the mail or getting fired. But when I pulled back, I could see that this is the happiest I've been in a very long time, maybe ever," end of quote. Sometimes being happy is just a matter of recognizing that you're happy. Going home on a packed, malfunctioning subway sometimes during week 3, I encountered an oblivious passenger woman spreading into my space with her pointy boots and overstuffed tote. I imagined jabbing her with an elbow, thinking, "This selfish jerk thinks that she owns the train." Then I was greeted with a bracing notion, as if my brain had taken a sip of vinegar. "Why are you so angry?" I wondered. "What if you just gave her a break?" I sat in that feeling, awkwardly. It was as if I'd been infected by the experiment. What if all of us cut one another a break? How different would the world be if we were several notches closer to compassion? Or, okay, fine, happiness. Now back to week 4. We were supposed to meditate 10 minutes per day, a task that some, including myself, found frustrating, confounding, and nearly undoable. Santos says, quote, "The hindrances to meditating can be a lack of time or sleepiness, but a major one is ill will. When midway through, you're filled with intrusive thoughts like, what's the point of this? As you do it more often, you'll notice that. Accept it and keep going," end of quote. So I'll probably never be a meditation master, but I had other things to worry about, namely our final task, an emotional Everest. Take 30 minutes to write a gratitude letter to someone we'd never had a chance to thank. Then, without warning, read it to that someone, ideally in person. Oh, staffers fretted over how to deliver something so intimate. I debated for days before nervously selecting a teacher I'd been close with. Nancy, the exacting, sardonic leader of our high school drama club, where I'd once spent countless extracurricular hours. Go ahead, ask me to sing anything from West Side Story. We arranged a FaceTime on a Sunday morning. She and I hadn't spoken in almost 20 years, and I was preparing myself for an award-winningly weird conversation. After we caught up, I explained my mission, and I launched into the letter, talking about when we met freshman year. Quote, "You were, and probably still are, a demanding figure, but your insistence on getting the best out of us felt like a form of true respect, and it made me step up in ways I hadn't thought I was capable of." End of quote. I was too teary to read my screen properly, and I looked up to see that her eyes were flooded too. When I finished, Nancy buried her face in her hands, her shoulders shaking. I thought about the nearly 40 years she spent teaching, the infinite nights I painted scenery alongside of her, the thousands of kids she's pushed and bolstered the way she did me, the insufficient thanks she's received. At that moment, we were tied together by a cord of memory, reaching each other through lost time, sending and retrieving a torrent of positive energy. I don't know what the meaning of life is, I thought, but maybe it's something like this. My God, what a beautiful letter, Nancy said, wiping her eyes. I can't tell you how good that makes me feel to hear. But did reading that make you feel happy? It did. It really, really did. And on a sidebar, here's a quote from Juliet G. Lowe, founder of the Girl Scouts. Do a good turn to someone every day. That is, be a giver, not a taker. Scholar and author Joseph Campbell says, life is without meaning. You bring the meaning to it. The meaning of life is whatever you ascribe to it. Being alive is the meaning. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.